Good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming. It is truly my privilege to introduce Mrs. Rookie Billet. Mrs. Billet is the principal of the Shalama School for Girls Middle Division and Rebbetzin of the Young Israel of Wardmere. Previously, Mrs. Billet was the principal of Mayanot Yeshiva High School for Girls in Teaneck, New Jersey, and former assistant principal of both Stella K. Abraham High School for Girls and Yeshiva University Central High School for Girls. She has been truly a leading teacher and administrator in Yeshiva High School education, informal Jewish education, and adult education for several decades. It is my privilege. The presentation today is Academic and Character Education 101, Effective Partnering Between Home and School.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to check the clock and go for it. So I often quote a mechanech that I met in a class just like this once, and he said as follows. He said, "You cannot think of Jewish education with a dry cleaner mentality, which is in, soiled and wrinkled at 9 a.m., out, pressed and clean at 5 p.m. It's a 24/7 kind of activity, and school and home must partner." So I guess what I'm going to just go through is a couple of my pet points about both parenting and having lived, I guess, on both sides of the coin, being a parent for, thank God, you know, my oldest grandchild is 18, so I've been a parent for a long time, and being an educator even for longer than that, because I started teaching still when I was in college. So I condense my presentation to the best of my ability into what I call the four R's. And I'll go through each of them for about 5 minutes, and then pull it all together, and we're done. I don't know. We're never done. We have to keep thinking about these things and keep growing and keep learning. Okay. So my first R, and you know, even though the three R's were reading, writing, and arithmetic, my first R is reading, but the others are different. I so passionately feel that reading is the most important tool that we as adults give to our children. Our children have to be introduced to books as soon as they're born. They have to hear our voices. They have to hear us speak with expression. They have to hear us tell them stories and read them books. Once the child is able to read, then it's our job to read with the child, have the child read out loud to us, train the child actually to read aloud to younger siblings so that they understand that they have to read with a voice and with expression and make it interesting, because if they make it interesting to someone else, they'll always make it interesting to themselves. I feel strongly about choosing a topic and an author that a child can be engaged in, reading it out loud with the child, and then plowing through every other book by that author to promote interest and engagement. There is no such thing as a child who will not read, provided we give them the experience. I know as a high school principal for many years, when I interviewed eighth graders and I would say to them, ask them the question, "What's the most interesting book you recently read?" And they would say to me, "Oh, nothing. I hate reading." My heart would break, because there was a breakdown somewhere in that. No child should hate reading, because reading opens up worlds. It gives a child a view of the past. It gives a child a view of the future. It gives a child a view of life across the globe. It gives a child who grows up in the Five Towns or Teaneck in a middle-class home what it feels like to be a slave, what it feels like to be dragged out of Africa in the 1700s, what it feels like to be a Revolutionary War soldier, what it feels like to be the Queen of England, what it feels like to be the president's wife. Anything. You can get any experience. You know, what it feels like to be an orphan who has to work for a living and become a governess because there were no other jobs and things like that. Talk about the characters with your child. Ask them questions. Give them rewards. Take them to the library. Let them pick. At the beginning, they'll choose a book by its cover, and later they'll choose a book by its title, and even later they'll choose a book by what says on the front panel or the back panel about what the story is about. I want to put in a plug here for Hebrew reading as well, because I know that when I hear 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, even 9th graders not reading fluently or not being able to read properly the Shmone Esrei that they learned when they were second graders, it's heartbreaking. And all of this can be remedied by
being a partner with our children in reading and making it exciting and making it special time that we give to them. And when we read with expression and with drama, as I said, it makes it all. The second R that I'm going to speak about for a couple of minutes is responsibility. I was reading a book recently by Robert Tuff called The Successful Child, and it's so interesting because he points out that we used to think that success in school and in life was all about academic success, was all about cognitive learning. And he points out that it's so not the case, that things like personal discipline, things like task completion, things like building your attention span, things like taking pride in your work, those are much more predictors of success, both in school and in life and in the job and in parenting, than IQ or even grades, etc. And we need to somehow convey this because responsibility is such a huge piece of that. I listened very carefully at lectures, but I once heard a lecture where someone was speaking about responsibility and said, the key word to avoid when teaching a child responsibility is the word just. And I'll just give you a few comments. I was just too busy to do that on time. It was just too hard for me to complete it. Someone else just begged me to do that wrong thing. It was just this once, and I'll never do it again. All of those words are excuses that seem to try to relieve us of responsibility that we really, really must take. And the best words to teach a child when they fail to take responsibility is, I'm sorry. How could I do it better next time? I always try to teach our children that honesty about wrongdoings is such an important piece of taking responsibility. Because if we're honest about it, then we know we have to fix it. We're apologetic, we feel bad, we try to make amends in some way, and that's taking responsibility. I always tell a child, I'd much rather hear, yes, I was the girl who wrote the bad words on the bathroom wall, or I was the girl who spread last year's test among my friends, or whatever it was. I'd rather hear that than, who, me? No, not me. Taking responsibility and being honest are such important things. And school is a huge place for responsibility, and I'll just mention a few things. Homework is a responsibility, projects, deadlines. But responsibility also takes place at home. A child should be given chores, whether they are daily chores, whether they are Shabbat chores, and those chores should involve important contributions to the household, which is saving people, other people work. I know that, at the beginning of the feminist movement, I remember reading a quotation which said, do not say, let's help mommy clean up the kitchen. Say, let's help clean up the kitchen, because the assumption is it's mommy's job and no one else's. But we all have to say, let's help clean up the kitchen. Let's help clear the laundry off the floor. Let's help put away the folded laundry. Let's help fold. Let's help draw the dishes. Let's help recycle the bottles. Let's help. There's so many things a child can do to take responsibility, both inside the home and outside the home. Take responsibility for going to Minyan, or at least for Tefillah on Sunday or on days off. Take responsibility for saying brachot before and after eating. I mentioned heartbreaking things that I see in school. When the teacher says in the morning before Tefillah at school, how many of you did not do Netilat Yadayim this morning? And half the class parades out because their parents didn't remind them that Netilat Yadayim in the morning is part of the Seder HaBoker, according to the Shulchan Aruch. We need to take responsibility, and we need to give our children responsibility for doing things. Sometimes we do that through checklists. Sometimes we do that through conversation and discussion. Sometimes we do that through rewards, etc. But we have to find a way. Taking responsibility means reading the whole book and not just reading the cliff notes. Taking responsibility, as I mentioned, today's positive psychology is saying, take responsibility for making a party for a friend, take responsibility for saying tehillim for the Israeli boys or for other holim or for people who are alone or lonely or for people who've lost their job, whatever it is, take responsibility that we are not just, you know, I am number one and we're selfish, self-centered people, but that we feel that we are part of a tzibur, we're part of a congregation, we're part of Knesset Yisrael, we're part of the Jewish people, we're part of a world of good people everywhere. We had high school students that went to New Orleans after Katrina with Habitat for Humanity. We give our kids responsibilities, they grow. Even just down the block, there's a kid with special needs. Down the road, there's the Kulanu Academy. There's a birthday party that's being organized for kids who can't afford a bat mitzvah or whatever it is. There are so many ways in which we can teach our kids responsibility for the other. Even on a small level, which a kid will benefit from, being a study buddy for a kid who's absent, that forces our kid to take responsibility for keeping notes more organized, for taking notes in class, so that they will know. I know that I have always felt how important it is to give a child responsibility for teaching. Make them or ask them to say a Dvar Torah at the table. It's such a multifaceted thing. First of all, they have to look it up. Then they have to prepare it. And don't let them read it. They must say it, because just reading it like this is not good enough. They have to own it so that they can share it with someone else. I think that they should also be taught to take responsibility to ask for help when it's needed, because that's also a sign of maturity and a sign of understanding that I have responsibilities. When I can't fulfill them myself, I'm going to go and ask for help for someone who is able. So if my first R was reading and my second R was responsibility, my third R is respect. I made a list of all the comments or all the, I guess, categories that we can have respect for. The first is, of course, self-respect. Then there's respect for others, respect for parents and grandparents, respect for other elders, respect for the environment, not to leave our own trash around, to help clean up in the lunchroom after lunch or at the dinner table, respect for other people's property. I can't tell you how many times kids tell me, well, I had my social studies book in the locker, but a kid from the previous class who didn't have it must have just gone over to my open locker and taken it out and didn't put it back. Respect for property, respect for school property, even when things aren't so beautiful, but especially when they're beautiful. Respect for the synagogue, not leaving popcorn that people can grind, onto the carpet on the floor, etc. Respect for the Torah, respect for other people's prayers by being quiet, even if we're not the best daveners. Respect for speakers. I often tell my students, if the only thing you learn this year is that when somebody gets up to speak, you're quiet. Even if you don't listen, if you take a trip in your mind, if you plan your wedding, if you plan your next summer vacation, whatever it is, plan your next boyfriend, but don't disturb. These are very important things. Building self-respect in a child will also help the child relate to respecting other people. And as I said, we have to set that example so strongly, whether it's as teachers or as parents. I sometimes even have to say to teachers, if the speaker is speaking at the assembly, it's not right for the teachers to speak when we're asking the kids for quiet, even if what you're speaking about is really important in terms of chinuch, etc. We have to set that example, because no matter what we say, children will do what we do, I hope, as well as what we say, but they will certainly do what we do, and they will call us on it if we don't do what we actually say. The fourth R that I'm going to speak about for a few minutes is, I call it reputation. And an interview question that people are asked at every stage, whether it's in eighth grade, whether it's getting into college, whether it's your first job, whether a young woman is applying, a young girl is applying to be a mother's helper in the summer, she'll be asked, what are the three characteristics that you are most proud of about yourself? Or what are three adjectives that people use to describe you? And, some kids are perplexed. What should I say for that? So, I try to give a list. So, for example, these are some characteristics that I know I would value: appreciative, kind, generous, giving, sensitive to others, honest, sincere, inclusive, hardworking, cooperative, a team player, respectful, forgiving, polite, optimistic. On the other hand, you know, there might be other characteristics that people might attribute to you, such as mean, nasty, a bully, selfish, deceitful, chutzpahdik, cliquish and exclusive, snobby, not a team player, disruptive, always taking the credit and never taking the blame. You know, who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And it takes work and effort. I often point out to kids that their talents are God-given. I know no matter how hard I try, I will never be a beautiful dancer. I can be a simple dancer because I have the spirit to, and you know, to be with some of people at their weddings or at the bar mitzvahs, but I don't have it. God didn't give it to me. I will never be a soloist in the choir. I just don't have it, even though my mother gave me piano lessons and the piano teacher made me sit on the sofa and, you know, write the notes that he was playing, etc., to try to train my ear. It's just not going to happen. But the character is within a child's hands, within a child's heart to do. These are things that doesn't take talent from HaKadosh Baruch Hu or blessings from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Each one of us can build our character, can take our personality by the hand. We can transform ourselves from a quiet, reserved person into someone who's more outgoing and more giving, and by rehearsing the kinds of compliments to give other people or subjects, we can change ourselves from someone who's selfish to someone who's more giving by going to volunteer job, by doing Tomchei Shabbat with our, you know, with our children every single week. Whatever it is, we can affect the transformation in these kinds of reputation traits or character traits. And, you know, whether it's hardworking, etc. But it is a partnership between parents and school. So those are the four most important, you know, I picked those R's just because I had a 30-minute time window in which to speak. So I'm just going to repeat the characteristics that Tuff mentions in his book. The ability to persist at a boring and possibly unrewarding task, whether it's, you know, studying all of Malchei Yehuda or all of Malchei Yisrael, if that's what our teacher, or the dimensions of the Beit HaMikdash, if we're doing a Navi project, or whether it's clearing the table or putting away the dishes or putting away all the socks when we have children in the family that are age 10, 8, 6 and 5, and we don't know exactly. These are things that need doing. The ability to delay gratification. Our generation now, I remember, the truth is, it's even old, because when I was a kid, I remember my mother saying to my brother, "You can't have it very now. There's no such thing as very now. You have to be patient. You have to wait. Sometimes you need to wait for the good to come." And our children need to know that 100 on a test or 90 on a test doesn't come from, I'm saying a magic word over my math notebook. It comes from persisting with problems and taking on new problems and trying to think them out and writing every line out consistently, etc. The tendency to follow through with a plan and to complete tasks. This is, again, it's not new for a book that was published in 2013. These are things I remember giving lectures in the 1980s on what was called at that time the cornucopia kid. The kid who had everything or was given everything on a silver platter and didn't have to work for it. And it was true then as it is now. Our kids are given too much. A kid should not be getting an iPhone in the sixth grade for no reason, you know, just because they ask you for it or just because every other kid in the class has one or 50% of the kids. These are not the things that we need to give. A child should earn rewards, and a child should be taught, I guess, to desire age-appropriate rewards and rewards that will help the child grow and be a better person and a better student and a better individual of character. One of the big things that we need to work on, according to Tuff, and I see it all the time as an educator, is what we call impulse control. know, the impulsivity, the blurting, these are all characteristics that sometimes are caused by specific, you know, medical or, you know, amedical conditions like ADHD or whatever, but sometimes they're just caused by the inability to have taught a child how to exercise certain self-control, how to think before I say, how to ask myself, will these words hurt or will these words heal? Will these words contribute or will these words disrupt? These are things that children need to know from the time they open their mouths at age 2 or 3 or whatever it is. When we're trying to teach these things when a child is 10, I'm not saying it's too late. It's never too late. But it's late in the game because then we have to unlearn. You know, so many things that we teach our children early, and I'll just, you know, make a sidestep for one of my other peeves. I'm very into correct pronunciation in Tefillah and in, you know, in Hebrew and in reading the Torah, etc. And when we teach the kids at the very beginning, we have to teach them the Ahavta, hey, et Hashem Elokecha, b'chol levavecha, u'b'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol me'odecha. We have to teach them the correct thing because once they have that rote memorization, even before they read, of mispronunciation in these things, the unlearning is such a difficult thing. And I'll just mention once again that these characteristics, which some authors actually call grit and character, are often more important than academic prowess. Academic IQ is not as important all the time as what we call emotional IQ, which is about understanding people and being sensitive and knowing how to be a better person. So I'd just like to, you know, close with 5 minutes on the larger topic of parents and school. I think it's really important to give the school all the information that you have about your child. If your child's been tested psychologically, or if your child's been seeing an emotional counselor, or whatever it is, the school needs to know. And if a parent says to me, "But I can't trust the teachers and the administration," change schools. If you can't trust the principal and the teachers in your school to have your child's best interests at heart and to keep your secrets, you don't belong in that school. You need to choose a school not just for the peer group, although a peer group is very important, but you need to trust the administration that they have the best interests of your child at heart. Treat a summons to school or a phone call from the teacher or the principal with the respect it deserves. If a teacher or principal says, "We'd like to see you tomorrow because there's a crisis with your child," don't say, "Well, I'm working," or will you meet me at 8 p.m. because that's when I can get free. No, you have to say, "My job is important, but maybe my child is also important. And if the school is making that demand of me, there must be some important reason." Defend your child. That's up to you. You are the first line of defense for your child. But also, so important to be realistic and to be open-minded. No one is attacking your parenting skills or your child with malice. Whoever is speaking to you about these things is just trying to be helpful and trying to use the experience that they have had with so many children over the course of a lifetime and a career to guide the parent to give the child as many benefits as possible. I feel very strongly about saying this. Do not rule out meds for the ADHD child. You know, it may be that that diagnosis is being given too frequently. There are articles and books about that also. But having seen the kinds of transformations from a child who is impulsive and blurting and can't sit still and can't do homework and hurts other people's feelings and whose knapsack it's impossible to find anything within, a child becomes a child who can follow instructions, who can do the work, who can produce his or her best ability, it makes a huge difference. It's not a life sentence, but sometimes it will make such a big difference in the child's self-esteem, self-respect, and also in the way in which the child adjusts to school and the way in which the teachers, who are dealing with often 25 children in a classroom, can handle and direct that difficult child in the right direction. The child will learn organizational skills, will learn time management, will learn so many wonderful things from being able to be attentive. I began at the beginning, and I can't emphasize it enough. Sit with your child with homework and with reading. Parents tell me, I can't. I have 6 children at home. I get home late. I can't. And I say, I really think you have to. If you brought 6 children into the world, you need to find the time to give each child 15 minutes at least twice a week. You're, you know, in a family with 2 parents and 6 children, so you manage, you balance. If you can't, I really think that parenting time is so important. If one can't, then it's absolutely imperative to hire a homework helper who is not a substitute for a parent. It's a different thing. And or get a chesed high school kid who's going to come and work with your child. As we said at the very beginning, it's not a dry cleaner mentality. You can't get the child home at 5 p.m., you know, pressed and clean. It just doesn't happen that way. It's a partnership between home and school for forever. I know that many parents complain that the schools don't teach the writing skills that the children need for the rest of their life and the rest of their career. And I say to a parent, your child should be typing his writing assignments on the computer. And you should be sitting behind the child on the computer. And resist the urge, especially if you're a good writer, to say, move over, let me just type it. But to say to the child, what's wrong with that paragraph? Does it have a grabber at the beginning? Is there a transitional phrase between paragraph 1 and paragraph 2? You made a statement in paragraph 1. Did you bring even 1 or 2 quotes from the book that you were reading to support that statement? That sentence is dull. You used the word hospitality 4 times. Can you think of a different word or the et cetera? Use the thesaurus. Use, you know, and search as hard as you can. We have found in school that because today's kids are so computer that savvy, that there are all kinds of vocabulary building workshops, etc., on the computer that the kids have. Some of our Jewish studies teachers have given the kids websites where they practice Hebrew vocabulary, Hebrew dikduk, where they practice reading, and then the computer corrects them. We have teachers who ask the kids to read 10 minutes to a phone number that the teacher has set up, and then the teacher listens to it. There are so many, you know, things that kids can actually enjoy that will give them pleasure even with the learning. And just last 2 things, control access to the media and internet-driven devices. Don't fall into the trap of using them as the best babysitter. Support the dress code and other policies of your schools, of your child's school. Nothing sends a more clear message of your school doesn't know what it's doing than you violating the school's rules. Be positive, volunteer at the school, come to evening events, even if it's hard. Not just when your kid is performing, which brings everybody out, but also when the school has something to say to you. I will, you know, just close by saying, Hatzlacha Rabba, whether you're still parenting, whether you're not yet parenting, whether you're grandparenting and helping your own children. The schooling years are the mandatory schooling years from preschool to grade 12, about the 14 hardest years of a parent's life. But you will make your tuition dollars work for you if you partner with your child and with the school to help make your child the most wonderful student and the most effective, having the most effective character traits that will build lifelong academic and personal skills for success in everything they do. Thank you very much.
Yes.